God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
I'm Libby. And so this is about the solution and the promises, I think is what they have written. So my interpretation of that, from an Essanon point of view, the solution are what we have. We have the keys to Essanon recovery. And I'm going to read, I just happen to have them right here. So I'm going to read those, particularly for those who have never heard this before. We accept sexaholism is a disease very similar to alcoholism. At first, many of us could not accept this idea. We thought it meant that sexaholics were somehow not responsible for their behavior, or that we were not entitled to our feelings of anger and hurt. But it does not mean either of those things. For Essanons, it means that the actions of the sexaholic are not a result of something we did or did not do. We did not cause the sexaholic behavior by being stupid, weak, or unattractive, and we did not have the power to control it. However, as we tried to control or ignore the sexaholism in our lives, we often unknowingly acted in ways that led to a further decline in our emotional health and enabled the sexaholic to continue to practice his or her disease. Over a period of time, many of us took on the shame, guilt, and fear that characterized the disease of sexaholism, even though we may not have acted out sexually. We too became spiritually and emotionally ill. Once we begin to see our problems in this light, we can also see that we do have choices concerning our own behavior. This is the beginning of our recovery. We remind ourselves as often as necessary that we are powerless over the behavior caused by sexaholism and all actions and reactions of other adults. I put down others because it's not just adults in my life. We know we must stop blaming and trying to control the sexaholic and the acting out behavior. Just as we did not cause the sexaholic's acting out, we cannot cure it. The sexual sobriety of the sexaholic is not our responsibility. While our encouragement and cooperation can be helpful to the sexaholic seeking recovery, real peace of mind for us depends upon changing our attitudes and eliminating our self-defeating behaviors. As the recovering alcoholics put it, some of us have tried to hold on to our old ideas, but the results were nil until we let go absolutely. We commit ourselves to our own recovery, taking full responsibility for our actions and reactions. With the loving help of other Essanon members and the God of our understanding, we focus on taking positive action to make our lives more serene and fulfilling, regardless of whether or not the sexaholic chooses sobriety. We attend as many meetings as we can, get a sponsor if possible, and begin to apply the principles of the 12 steps to our lives. We use the telephone, the Essanon literature, and the Essanon slogans. Eventually, we reach out to help others and try to carry the message of our own recovery. We do these things in our own way, one day at a time, but we do them striving for progress, not perfection. This is what is meant by working the program. And for me, that's the long version, because that's even longer than what we usually read in our meetings. For me, to boil this down, it's about the three C's. In other Anon programs, they talk about the three C's. I didn't cause it, I can't control it, and I can't cure it. And those are the things for me that are a real big solution for how do I deal with how I've been affected by this disease. And then the last line, we strive for progress, not perfection. So to really boil it down, that's to me what that's what this saying says. I didn't cause it by being unattractive or stupid or weak. and I can't control it by being stronger. And I can't cure it. It's not my job, it says. And it's really about me stepping out of the way so that a higher power can step in for me and for everybody around me. So that's kind of what I have on the solution, and I wanted to move to the promises, which to me are the gifts. I love the promises in the big book, and I also love the gifts that are written out for our program. And I want to preface this by just sharing how much gratitude I feel today. When I come to things like this, you know, I've been in recovery a long time now, and it's still important for me to be every day be grateful for what's in my life, regardless of how it looks. And I don't know, there's something about being around in a retreat or a marathon or convention situation where that just gets real close. Gets really, really close here, and my emotions are right on the surface about, in the tears of just how grateful I am for the miracles. To me, this is about don't quit before the miracle happens. Don't quit before the miracle happens. And what I want to share with you in this last session here are some of the miracles that have happened in my life and how they look today. You know, I mean, some of these miracles happened a long time ago, but they're still happening. They're still happening. So today I am really overwhelmed with gratitude and just being reminded of how much I have in my life and how much has happened because of this program, really because of this program. Okay, so the gifts of the Essanon program. When we approach the process of recovery with honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness to apply the principles of the 12 steps to our lives, we will soon begin to see the rewards. We will become able to surrender our self-defeating behavior. I think all my stories fall into that category. We will find that we have the strength and insight to make good choices for ourselves, our ability to act positively on behalf of our health, jobs, families, and bank accounts will amaze us. The story that I have around that, that comes up for me around that, is something very, very recent, and that was making the decision, the strength and insight to make good choices for ourselves and our families, and that was the biggest choice I had to make recently, was sending my 17-year-old to wilderness treatment this spring, summer. And I could not have done that without this program. I could not have been clear about it, what was the right thing to do. It was the toughest thing I have ever decided in my whole life. We didn't even take him there. We had somebody come and pick him up and transport him. And these people were strangers to me. I didn't have any idea who they were. I had no idea who I was sending him to. But once he was gone, in that first week, it was so clear to me that I had to physically hand this child over. I mean, he's not a child, he's a young man, to a higher power that was outside of my geographic area. I mean, he came to Southeast Utah, and I live in, you know, Western North Carolina. And I physically had to hand him over in order to take care of myself. It's been a physical thing. And there's a couple of stories around that. You know, we thought we knew what this program looked like and what it was going to sort of unfold. And little did I know, I mean, there were so many little times along the way that I found out details about this program, about what the treatment center, the treatment stuff that he was going to do and what was happening right at the right time. I mean, okay, he's going to Southeast Utah and he had to take this long trip. We woke him up at 3:30 in the morning. And they, you know, they flew here, they flew there, they called us every time. And they finally get him to this little town in Southeast Utah, and we think, right, he's there. And then they call us and say, okay, he's been geared up, and now he's in the car, and he's going another 2 hours out into the backwoods. And my jaw just fell to the ground at that point. And I was like, oh, my goodness. I had no idea. Would I have sent him if I'd known that it was, I mean, yeah, I knew he was going to be out in the wilderness, but to drive 2 hours in a four-wheel drive, you know.
The last 12 miles.
The last 12 miles on, you know. And, you know, that was just like a real shock to me. And thank God I didn't know it beforehand, because I may not have done it. I may have pulled back. But it was clearly the right thing to do. The other thing, and then a week or so into it, we're getting phone calls every week from a therapist that goes out into the field. And our first job is to write impact letters. So Jim and I take this very seriously. And it was something to take very serious. But, you know, why did we send you? Give specific, specific reasons. This is what we're going to do.
What do you have to do to come home?
Yeah, what do you have to do to come home? Right. So we write these like four pages later each, and we send them off. And the following week, this therapist calls and says, yeah, the group had a lot of feedback about your impact letters. And we're talking about it. I said, wait. The whole group read them? I said, what? He said, yeah. We do it in circle. And then I was like, oh, God. That letter would have been completely different if I'd known that. Completely different.
And another question was, so is he in a tent by himself, or does he share a tent with somebody else? They don't have tents. They don't have backpacks. You know, it's two sticks for fire if they want fire, and you know, they got a tarp if they want to learn how to put it up, and the strap system where they roll all their gear up in their tarp and carry it around with them. And I was like, wow. And then the next unknown that popped up was, okay, now we have to arrange aftercare. What's aftercare? You know, I mean, I already wrote the big check. Isn't this going to be the prescription that fixes everything, you know? And you got to go 3-4 months to aftercare. And it's like all these things that if we'd known it ahead of time, we probably would have waited another couple of years, you know, done it. But God just gave us what we needed when we needed it, and not more than we could handle.
Yeah, that's
almost cool. More than we can handle.
Yeah,
it's funny. It's one of those things, you know. There's we used to have a thing on the bulletin board that said nothing ever happens till it happens to you. And I remember, you know, a couple of decades ago, my sister had a miscarriage. And I was like, oh, gee, that's too bad, you know. And then we had one. I was like, oh, I wasn't very compassionate or very supportive of her when she had this. I didn't realize how devastating it was. And people say, oh, you sent our kid off to treatment. I'm like, oh, really? And then it happens to me, and it's like, oh, my God, my stomach's in knots for weeks. You know, I mean, I didn't have any idea. I was grateful I had a program because I knew what to do. I just started treating myself like a newcomer again, going to a meeting every day, making a bunch of phone calls, you know, reading, doing. I mean, I just got into self-care really heavy because it was just tearing me up. You know, I had no idea what. I guess it's just nothing ever happens until it happens to me. You know? That's all.
I think
I guess the point of that for me, thank God I know how to take care of myself now. Without the program, I wouldn't know to go to a meeting every day. I wouldn't even know that I was hurting. You know, I'd just be beating on people and acting out and not have a clue why. So that's all.
I guess the other general statement that I want to make about this gift, the strength and insight to make good choices for ourselves and act positively on behalf of my family, is just the simple act of being a parent of a teen is a huge job. It's a huge job. And it's a gift. It is a gift. I think the struggles in our lives are the biggest gifts. And it's really challenging. And for me to sit here, because I certainly did not have good role models in how to do that. My parents did the best that they could. But, I'm the youngest of four. And every single one of my older sisters left home when they were teenagers. By the time they were 16 or 17, they were out of the house, either to private school or to a friend's. You know, they were gone. And so that age is really challenging, and it clearly has been in my family. And I've been given tools here to do that differently, or at least try to. I mean, I'm not doing it perfectly, but at least I'm being given something to try to do something differently. And nobody's dead. Nobody's dead yet. The next gift is we will find that others are doing for themselves, doing things for themselves, that which we thought we had to do for them. For me, the story around that one is an epiphany that I had when I was doing my fourth step. And that was that my helping, and particularly with my kids, but certainly with Jim as well, was directly interfering with their own relationship with a higher power. That was not a fun thing to look at. I was absolutely shocked when I came up with that one. But now that I see that, I'm able to step out of the way. And I can recognize that my helping is really an interference. So if I step out of the way, then I can allow them to make better choices for themselves. They've got to do it.
And one of the ways that I've seen that in my program and in the program of the people that I sponsor is that so often we feel like we're walking on eggshells. And if she gets upset or if she's out of sorts, what am I going to do? You know, how do I? And what I coach myself and other people to do is to remember that if she's miserable, it's awesome. It's great. Root for that, you know, because if she stays miserable long enough, she's going to do something about it. Whereas if I try to help, if I get in the way, if I fix, or if I battle, you know, if I'm something to fight besides her own illness, I just postpone that. You know, and I can continue. I can postpone that into the next lifetime if I continue to be the rescuer, the caretaker, or the problem. And so it's really kind of a shift for me, because and I need that shift in to be grateful for her misery. And it sounds kind of harsh, but it's the way I have to look at it, so that I'm not terrified of her misery. It's like, oh, good, she's going to get to God here. You know, hallelujah, keep me out of the way. And I find that really useful, because I don't know about you guys, but the guys I sponsor and me, when our wives get unhappy, we get terrified. It's like, oh my God, what? You know, it's like my dad or my mom, or you know, I just go right back to being a little kid and go, shit, I better do something quick. And for me to just sit there and say, yes, come on, God, you know, go, Libby, go, you can do it, is a different place for me. And it's really, you know, it's a gift of this program that I can watch rather than act.
Yeah, for me, it's letting go of that knee-jerk reaction, because it comes. I mean, it's there. It's like, whoa. And I can feel my stomach tighten, but I can take that pause. I can take that pause. It's what the program gives me is the pause, and I don't have to jump right in there. And, well, this is what I think you should, you know, I can just pause and back off and walk away. Our ability to give and receive love will expand tremendously, and we will become increasingly available for loving relationships with others.
So last winter, this is really weird, and I don't understand how it happened, but it was like the first or second week in January, and I recognized that I was like 10 days into it when I saw it, and I was being playful and silly. We both work at home, and my office is upstairs and hers is downstairs, and I would just come down and walk into a room and say, how come I can't sit still. And so I'm always walking down, wander in the kitchen, you know, wander outside, wander into her office, bother her for a while. And so I come downstairs, I go into her office and bother her, and I'd say things like, how come you never come up and visit me? You know, or whatever. And I would just do these things that were funny, and it was like I was creating laughter in our relationship. Now, like I said, I don't know when this started, but at about a week or 10 days into it, I noticed it and thought, this is cool. Look at the positive effect it's having. I'm going to go with it. You know, and so then I started putting some conscious energy into it, and it continued. And for about, I don't know, and I didn't talk about it with her. And for a month or a month and a half, it was like my focus was to have fun in our relationship. And it's kind of like that part of the essay solution of taking the actions of love to improve our relations with others. But it was just this conscious, okay, let's have fun. Let's laugh. And part of our whole thing is we both work. We don't play very well, but we work really well, you know. And I mean, that it crosses the line into a problem. But the that whole thing of having fun with her was like, I don't know, it was a whole new, you know, night class for me or something. It's continued in our relationship, you know, and it's made a change, and it's been a really useful tool that I don't know where it came from, you know. And that's usually the way the solution comes into my life, is if I just do my stuff every day and, you know, try to maintain my spiritual condition, these things start happening that are really cool that maybe I can join in, you know. That's
yeah. The thing I wanted to add to that, unless you're going to talk about it later, was your physical stuff that was going on at the same time. Or not only that, but the time, I guess it was the time of year is really what I want to talk about. Because this started happening in January and February, and I can't remember when I said this yesterday, but cyclically, I guess it was last night at the couples meeting. You know, Jim has, I'm going to say something about you.
Whether it's true or not.
Jim has suffered from depression, you know, bouts of depression. And one of the times, and I think some of it is seasonal affect disorder, because I can look back and see January and February as being tough times. And I think I do as well. We both have a propensity towards that.
That's right, because you're almost ready to move out at the end of February.
Oh, God, February, yeah. By the end of February, it's always like, please, when is this going to change? And we don't live in a hugely winter area either. I mean, if we lived here, I think we really have trouble. So maybe that's one of the other reasons why we like down in the southeast now. But anyway, so I've watched this. I've recognized this, and I've watched this. And do what I can to take care of myself around it, recognize it, say, yep, here it is. This is the way that it is right now. It's okay, plod forward. This too shall pass, sort of thing. Well, this year, it wasn't there. And it not only wasn't there, it was completely opposite. So for me, to watch this start to happen, it was like, something's really weird here. I mean, it was clear. I mean, all of a sudden it was like, is there something I should know about? Because this is not, like, I've known you for 20-some-odd years, and the only other time that I've seen you this happy was right before you disclosed to me. You know, the only other time I've seen you be this nice to me was right before you disclosed me. I finally said that to him because I'm starting to think, oh, God, this is not good. This is not good. And so I started to bring this up, and he just looked at me and started to laugh. He was like, oh, I can't believe you thinking that. I said, well, you know, I mean, it's sort of like imprinted in my brain that, you know, wow, life got really wonderful. And all of a sudden, a huge bomb dropped. And, you know, now life is different, particularly at this time of year. Is there a bomb that's coming? So, but yeah, once I got over that and trusted that it was really okay, we really started to have some good times together. And I think it is about taking the actions of love, and I think it's about just getting to this level of acceptance, to accept Jim for who he is, and just be able to be considerate and compassionate and all those things without the judgment, and being able to have fun together. Yeah, to see others with acceptance and without judgment is really what it was about. Okay, we will recover the feeling of joy. Do you have anything for that one specifically?
You know, it's weird. My health has generally been pretty sturdy, you know. And last, we came back from Christmas break, and I started to deteriorate. My muscles and joints were failing. And they had trouble diagnosing what it was, and it took until about mid-April before I started getting treated for it. And by the beginning of February, I was, like, seeing myself on a walker, a week away or 2 weeks away. I was just really pretty incapacitated. And it was confusing. It was discouraging. Nobody really knew what was going on. And I was having a great time. Usually in the past, when I've been sick, you don't want to be around me. I make everybody miserable if I'm miserable. I mean, that's kind of my job, you know. And this winter, you know, my health is just going down. And I was having fun. And spring break came up, and I'm just barely able to walk. And my boys wanted to go to New York City for the week. So I remember Libby saying, "You can't even walk. You're going to go to New York with these guys and try the subways and stuff?" And what came up for me was that, you know, I mean, this may be the best it ever gets. I want to go to spring break with my boys. And it was a totally different attitude than I've had in the past. But sometime in April, I had committed some 6 months earlier to go to Jacksonville and lead a step workshop for the weekend. Well, you know, I'm just able to hobble to the podium. But I was down there doing it because, you know, it might be my last chance. I don't know. And that's a way different attitude for me. I've had the best winter that I ever had, and we've had the best winter we ever had, while my health was probably at the worst it's ever been, and the uncertainty of it was there too. And, you know, I don't understand why or how that worked, you know, but I know it's a result of this program. And now I got the right medicine and I'm pretty good, but, you know, they say it's going to go away in a year or two. But there was, it's just something about being open to God working in my life and being open, having a different attitude. You know, I have a totally different attitude than I used to. I used to would have been in self-pity and angry that why is this happening to me and, you know, all those things that we do. And I had a lot of acceptance around it. And I don't know where it came from. Joy in my life, despite whatever, you know.
Thanks. We will become more honest with ourselves and experience a new comfort in our intimate relationships. I have a couple for that one. A couple of years into recovery, I think it was a couple of years, you would know the date, I don't. I found out about a slip of Jim's 6 months after the fact. And this really bothered me, to say it lightly. Really bothered me. Now, I didn't rip him a new orifice, but I knew that I had to say, I knew that it was something that was really bothering me. And I spent, because literally, I couldn't stomach it. I couldn't eat. You know, I had some real physical stuff going on, and it was like, okay, I guess I need to say something here. But I didn't. I knew enough in program that I wanted to do it differently. I wanted to do it differently. So I spent about a day and a half, maybe 2 days, really sitting with this in another part of the house by myself, really meditating about this. And so I asked Jim, you know, I asked if I could talk to him about it, and I did, and I was able to, I think it was the first time that I was able to say something to him, to speak my truth without expectations. And what I said was, you know, I can't have secrets between us, because we had 10 years of secrets, and it's got us into a lot of trouble. But on the other hand, I do not need to know the details. I do not want to know the details. They'll make me crazy. They'll make me crazy because it's part of my disease. So what I said was, if you cross your bottom line, I need to know that. If you're struggling, it would be really helpful so that I can recognize, because it was relatively early that I needed some validation of what my intuition was. Just, is it me? Is he really struggling? You know, and you know, if you're really, really struggling, you just let me know, hey, I'm kind of struggling today. that's enough, that's it, that's all I need to know. I don't want to know the details. Do not want to know the details. And it was the first time, like I say, to be really able to speak my truth without expectations. And I remember sharing this with my sponsor, and her comment, which has always stuck with me, she said, yeah, you know, it's amazing when we get honest how God enters the room. And I will never forget that. And it's as clear to me as we are sitting here, that feeling, because he was able to share with me about how I judged him, and it was afraid, he was afraid to come to me and say this to me, because, you know, I had to hear about my stuff too. And we were, I think we were both able to share with each other to a level of honesty that we had never been able to before. I have another story too, but if you've got something, that's okay. Okay. Another story around this was you know, there's the trust is a huge issue, particularly I think with this disease. How do I trust him? When do I know? Da 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 da. I mean, I hear it all the time, and of course, it was part of my issue too. I mean, there was betrayal, there was hurt, there was, you know, lots and lots of things. And how am I ever going to trust him? And I don't remember focusing a whole lot on that, but it was certainly in the back of my mind. You know, when is this? When am I going to know? When am I going to know? When am I going to know? And I don't remember how far along I was in recovery when this happened. It was a while. It was a while. But it was before we left Columbus, so it had to have been less than 2 years or something like that. But just sitting next to him one day on the bed, we're just sitting there, and this voice, as clear as a bell, said, "You can trust him now." I wasn't asking for it. I wasn't looking for it. And I was just like, "And you can tell him." And I did. And that was it. You know, so I don't know how that happened. All I know is that working this program and continuing to do what I needed to do did that. So those are my two stories about that. Am I going on?
What's that say? We'll become more honest with ourselves and experience a new comfort in our intimate relationships. It was about it might be 2 years ago now, when I was really struggling watching Libby work and watching her work become her life and an obsession, really. And I didn't like it. And I'm sure I'd tried to manage it over the years, you know, and pointed it out very helpfully, you know, and that kind of thing. And what I realized at the time was that I was really struggling myself. And so one of the things I did was I went to the Workaholics Anonymous website. Turns out they have a great website. They have 20 questions. They have, you know, there's a lot of material there. And I got a lot of support just by reading this stuff, recognizing that, gee, I used to have this too, and I can relate to it. And I don't know why I don't have it anymore. But anyway, it was good for me. And boy, everything in me wanted to tell her to go to this website and read it, you know? And I didn't. I was open to doing that if the opportunity came up, you know, if it seemed like the right time. It was a year and a half later, it was sometime last winter, I don't remember when it was, and we were having fun, you know, and it's one of these silly times when we're both laughing and giggling that I was talking about earlier. And it got around to teasing her about her work, you know, very gently and lightly, and even her teasing herself about her work. And I mentioned that, you know, Workaholics Anonymous has a great website. They've got 20 questions. Hell, they've probably got 40 questions. They're workaholics, you know. We're laughing and giggling. And we're laughing and having a great time with it. And she said, "Oh, so you've been there, huh? You've gone to it." You know, it's like, gotcha. And I said, "Well, yeah, but I went as a WAnon, you know." And the conversation stopped. You know, it just was like, whoop, you know. But it was out. And it was out in a gentle, kind, loving, compassionate way. And it was clear within just a couple of days that she had gone there and read it, you know, because things started to shift. And if I'd done that any time earlier in that year and a half, you know, and take it upon myself to tell her what she needed to do and what she needed to read, you know how well it would have worked. And yet, you know, that ability to, what was it again? Become more honest with ourselves. You know, I was the one that was struggling and experienced new comfort in our intimate relationships. Wait for the right time was that's a gift of this program. I didn't know how to do that. And one of those other ones for me is that up there on the board, we were in a couples meeting one night. I never could do a 10th step. I couldn't tell her when I slipped. I couldn't tell her anything was wrong. You know, I saw any personal interaction as a threat, not just any personal criticism as a threat. And, you know, and one night at a couples meeting, somebody said the all-purpose apology. It's, I'm sorry I was wrong, please forgive me. I didn't have to think of what I was wrong about and who am I talking to. I mean, I could just blurt this out. And it was really helpful for me to break that dam and to start being able to do a 10th step. And it's worked. It's worked. It's almost a joke with us now, you know. But it's a real easy way to just... So 8 Simple Words has been a real gift of this program for me, too.
The day before, I was like, these are the 8 words that you're supposed to be saying right now. What are those 8 words you're supposed to say? I can't remember what it was about. Okay, you ready? All right. We will feel the security that arises from true fellowship with others in the program, knowing that we are loved and accepted just as we are. I think we shared a lot about that this weekend, about the fellowship of the program. And what also comes up for me is that I am loved and accepted just as I am. I am not judged. This is the first place I've ever been that I wasn't judged. To know that I can come in here and lead with my weakness and look really bad and turn into a puddle on the floor and the whole 9 yards, and it doesn't matter. It's okay.
Not only that, it'll be helpful.
Yeah.
To somebody. You know, to just be honest. And it's like Libby read yesterday morning from the big book on page 17. We are people who normally would not mix. But there exists among us a fellowship, a friendliness, and an understanding which is indescribably wonderful.
Yeah, there was another. Let me see. I don't know if I ended with this. No, it wasn't service. Sorry. I'll find it. Oh, yes, here. It's on page 16 of the big book. Most of us feel we need look no further for utopia. We have found it with us right here and now. You know, if I ever need a safe place to go, this is where to come. And I know that one. Failures of failure and inadequacy will be replaced by self-confidence and independence of spirit. A great start to this one. One of the places that I have felt most inadequate and the least self-confident is with my family of origin, particularly my parents. Boy, it's taken me a long... I'm going to be 50 this month. And the quickest way to get me back to feeling like a 12-year-old is just to put me with my parents. I'm just a little girl all over again, trying to get it right and doing all that thing. Well, my parents are getting up in age, and a number of years ago, again, I could not have this relationship with them without this program. But they still live in southern New Hampshire, and it's the policy in our family that if you're going to see my parents, you got to go there. They don't come to you, all right? So... I recognized that it was never going to change, and they were getting up in years. And, you know, I got to suit up and show up, you know, get on the plane, go up there, visit them, and start doing it. And so I've been doing that. And sometimes, I don't know how long ago we started with all of us going up. We'd go up once a year. And then recently, it's just like, I don't care if you guys are coming or not. I need to go. So I've really started to make that... part of my life.
And the guys say, we're not.
Yeah. And he says, oh, thank God. I don't have to go. No, you don't have to go. But, you know, my parents are getting up in age, and, you know, they're not going to be around forever, and it's the right thing to do. So they have a summer place off the coast of Maine. And the last few years, I've made the effort to go up and visit them there, which is a little complicated, but it works out well. It's worked out well. And last year, because you got to get someone to pick you up at the airport and then get you. What's the matter? It is important. Okay, it's complicated. You know, to get from the airport, you not only have to get, you have to. It's just complicated. So, this last year, I started to call around to some of my sisters. You know, is anybody going to be around that can pick me up and do this and that? Because I don't want my 85-year-old father doing it. And da da da. Well, the only one that's going to be there at the time when I got this fabulous price to go up there, I just happened to find this great price. But these are the dates. Is my crazy, crazy sister. I mean, crazy sister. And I've got three sisters, and she's the one that's possibly psychotic, crazy. And when I first heard this, I went, that's a clear no. I'm not supposed to go and be trapped on this place with them, no car, no way to get away, and not only with just my parents, but with my crazy sister. So I thought, no, I'm not going. And then I thought about it, and I said, you know, this is the only chance I'm going to get. I need to go. So I did, and I had a great time. It was this miracle that happened. It was the first time that I came home and I said, you know what? I felt like an adult the whole time I was there. I was the voice of reason, which wasn't really hard considering the people that I was with. But but you have to understand how easy it is for me to get sucked into that bad voice, to get, you know, caught up in all of that, you know, dynamics. And I was the one that was able to be quiet when I needed to be quiet, speak up when I needed to speak up, say, no, we're not going to talk about that now. Tomorrow morning, everybody's too tired. La, 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 la. No, we're not talking about that. La, 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 la. You know, and everybody go, oh, okay. And that was it. Or, and I was able to sit down and discuss my parents' trust with them and say, because they brought it up the year before, and I said, you know, you asked me my opinions, and here they are. I mean, it was a miracle. It was a miracle for me to have that sort of interaction with them. So that's how this program has affected my self-confidence and changed my relation. You know, and this is changing relationships with people in my life as well.
Go ahead. Yeah, keep going.
Okay. We will no longer depend on other people to provide us with an identity or a sense of self-worth.
I think that one's pretty obvious. We don't need to go on.
Yeah. I think the only thing that I want to say about that is when I stop being needy, you must, you know, you have to fulfill all of my needs. My relationships have shifted completely. I thought that in order to get what I wanted from him, I had to be needier and him to make me whole. And it's just the opposite. So, ready? All right. We will find the courage to be true to ourselves. Okay.
I guess the only one I have about that is I can't remember what room I've mentioned this anymore, and I don't have my car keys with me, but I got a sobriety token on there, and on the back of it it says, "To thine own self be true," and there's even somewhere in the big book where there's a quote where wife fits in there really well. I have to remind people that I sponsor a lot that it does, their chip doesn't say, "To thine own wife be true," it says, "To thine own self be true," and because it's so easy for us to get caught in that. I'm not going to be okay if she's not okay. And that's all.
We will know peace of mind and feel a stronger connection with the higher power of our understanding, and our hope will turn to faith that God is really working in our lives as we explore the wonders of serenity, dignity, and emotional growth.
I got some for that.
Good.
We live out in the country, and we're on like 5 acres, and there's this little house down the road down in front of us. When we moved there, there was this 81-year-old lady, Irene, that lived there. And she was so sweet, you know, and we walk most days up and down this country road. And then Irene died 3 years later or something like that. And it's funny, you know, nothing ever happens to you, happens to you. So Irene died. That's all. And then we move on. But new neighbors moved in. The point of the story is coming. New neighbors moved in, and they had this dog that was just real scary. I don't know what it was, you know, a pit bull or something. And we'd go walk, and it wasn't on a chain, it wasn't in a pen. We'd go walking, and this dog would come out of the street, and I was really worried he was going to take one of us down. And we walked about twice, and then you went off to a show in Florida. And I walked the next day, and this dog is about to kill me. Actually, the night before she left, we'd walked in the evening, and I was really worried that he was going to get you. And it was just, he'd come right out to the road, and you know, within just a foot of us, and didn't dare turn around. And so I'm trying to figure out, what am I going to do? I mean, all of a sudden, my idyllic walk in the country is not possible anymore. And so I'm, you know, my solutions are like, well, I could take a 9-iron. And maybe get a lucky swing. I could take a baseball bat with me. Maybe that would work. And I'm just obsessing, trying to figure this out, trying to figure it out. And I don't really want to kill the dog. And I poison it. You know, what am I going to do? And I'm thinking and thinking and thinking. And I walk into the house just frustrated. And I say to my son, who happens to be there, Burns, what am I going to do about this? And as soon as the question was out of my mouth, the answer came into my head. You know, all I had to do was ask, but I hadn't done that yet. And it didn't even matter who I asked. So the voice said, you're smarter than the dog. Make friends with it. So I cut up a chicken patty. You know, I microwave it, put it in a Ziploc bag, and I take off for my walk. And the dog goes, rawr, 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 and I throw a couple pieces of chicken, you know, over there, not too close to me. And he stops, eats the chicken, and he's totally confused. You know, now it's like, what's happening here, you know? So I think, yes, I've got it. I feed him a little more chicken, and I take off for my walk, save a little bit for the way home. And on the way home, I feed him again, and I am just like the man. You know, I've already forgotten where the solution came from. And, you know, I say, yeah, I got this dog. Yeah, look at what I go. And this voice comes into my head that says, you know, if you're so smart, why don't you treat your wife like that? Why don't you throw her a bone once in a while? It's like, ooh, you know, gosh. Because this is back when I had a lot of animosity about you taking off the shows and abandoning me with the kids and, you know, all this stuff. Now I'm like, oh, shit, you know? What do I do now? And what came to me was taking actions of love to improve my relationships with others, or my relations with others. And I went home, you know, walked up our driveway and got on the phone. And I think you must have been gone 2 days or something, because I talked to you the night before and it was an awful show. You were having a terrible time. You were miserable. And all of your, you know, I want to sell a lot and be successful was in your face because it wasn't working. And I remember calling you up on the phone and just telling you that it was really important you just have fun this weekend. You know, you're with a bunch of cool people. You're away from home on your own. Have a ball. Don't worry about whether it's successful or not. And then I quit, and I got off the phone. And then to hear from her later that made a huge difference. That was like a turning point in her weekend, you know, or her week. I mean, you're out of town a week. And it was, you know, none of it came from me, you know. And it was really good. So, I don't know.
God is really working in our
stronger connection with a higher power of our, yeah. That's it, the dog story. Thank you.
Thanks, Jim. Yeah, boy, that's right. When you mentioned that, I completely forgot the connection between that and the Florida show. I mean, and this show, I'd had to drive 2 days to get there, and it was just terminal. I mean, just terminal, terminal, terminal. And he gives me this nugget this one day, and I was like, wow, that is exactly what I needed to hear. Thank you for giving me permission to just be here and recognize that this was a bad idea. Don't ever do it again. But you know what? You're here. Guess what? You did it. You're here. May as well just enjoy it. And the guy who was across from me in this show, you know, they're piping in music and everything, And I don't have anything to do. I mean, literally, I'm not even talking to people. So I'm out in the aisle. This was at a time when we were ballroom dancing. So they're playing foxtrot music. And so I'm foxtrotting out in the aisle and everything. And David, who's across the aisle, says, "Oh, you want a foxtrot?" And I'm like, "Wow, we could foxtrot here." I mean, so yeah, it gave me the opportunity to just let go. And just let go and just be there. The other thing that I wanted to bring up around this is that, you know, have the faith that God is really working in our lives. And one of the things early on, I can't remember if I shared this or if it just came up for me afterwards or whatever, is one of the big reasons about, one of the big things about recovery for me early on, you know, and recognizing that this is a family disease, is, you know, I did recovery for my kids. I did not want to pass. I wanted to do whatever I could to stop the cycle. And so I'm doing my thing. And do we see a difference? Yeah, little bits here and there. But it's clear we have one Anon and we have one addict, you know, in our kids. I mean, it's real clear, even from young. So I just keep working my program, and then we make this decision to send our youngest to a treatment program this spring. And within a week, we hear back that he is just making tremendous progress. He's had these huge, you know, realizations, and it's like, wow, what a gift. And then our oldest son starts coming to Anon meetings with us. And the story that I wanted to tell about that was after one of these meetings, it was only after a couple of meetings, and we had two cars down there. And he said, I said, do you want me to drive your car? He says, yeah, that'd be really great, Mom. So I'm driving, and he's riding. And we're driving along, and he starts telling me about how he's going to start doing this work because he needs to do it for himself, not because of his brother, but for himself. I'm like, yeah, this is good. And then he said, you know, he's 19. He says, you and Dad have been in recovery like half of my life. I said, yeah, that's true. And he says, you know, and you've homeschooled me. He says, I've been around you a lot. And I said, yeah, this is true. And he says, you have to understand, this has had a huge impact, huge effect on how I think about things. And I just burst into tears. You know, and the goosebumps. And I was just like, wow. I never expected to hear that. So there was, in just a matter of a few weeks, there was this miracle that my youngest son, miracle that we were able to send, to make the decision to send him off. My youngest son is clearly making a lot of progress in it, and it's making an impact on him. And here is this impact on my other son. And boom, 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 you know, it's all right there in my face. In just a couple of weeks, it's just, I was like, wow, what does God have in store for the rest of the summer? You know, I mean, it's like, this is really cool. So those are some of my stories. And I guess, you want to say something?
You done?
I was just going to say one last little paragraph. Okay. That's all. You got another
story?
Go
for it, man.
It's a simple program for me. You know, there's these little sayings, you know, suit up and show up, do the next right thing, do something different. That's a big mantra for me. Just do something different. Doesn't really matter if it's the perfect thing, just do something different, because clearly what I've done before didn't work. So may as well try something different. Be right with my higher power, to thine own self be true. And just how this has affected me in all areas of my life. All relationships in my life, because really that's what this program is about for me. It's helping me live with other, not only with myself and in my own skin, but changing the relationships. I truly believe that's what S-Anon is about. It's about changing how I relate with other people and am able to function with other people. So I really want to thank you for having me. But anyway, go ahead. Okay, sorry.
Recovery for me has always been, I think of the song, what's that Disney movie about the guy in India and the, it's Ganga Din, but it's, you know, what's the Disney movie, the little boy.
Jungle Book.
Thank you. The Jungle Book. In Jungle Book, there's a monkey, King Louie, and King Louie sings, "You, I want to be like you. I want to talk like you. I want to walk like you," and it goes on, and that's been recovery for me, you know, because I want to be like you. I don't want to be the way I was anymore, and it's been so important for me to have people around that are healthy, that give me the hope and encouragement that if I keep doing what they did and what they tell me to do, that I'll end up like them, you know, and that's what it's about. I'm King Louie, you know, and I so badly want to be human instead of the monkey that I've been. So, but there's a couple of promises in the big book that are actually second step promises. You know, they're on like page 25 and 27 early on, and I think they bear reading. One is, the great fact is just this and nothing less, that we have had deep and effective spiritual experiences which have revolutionized our whole attitude toward life, toward our fellows, and toward God's universe. Yes? Oh, yeah, okay. And then the other one on page 27, another second step promises. And it's interesting, I had one of these sponsees that just was on fire, and and I guess that comes in a couple of different ways. You know, his butt was on fire, so his program was too. You know, oftentimes they go together. And he, from last November to last February, he just like screamed through the steps, and was a whole different guy. And it was just amazing. And he called me one day in February, and he's talking very rationally about this issue in his life, and I pointed him to page 27, where I think it's Roland is talking to Dr. Young, and he comes back after having been analyzed and going back out and drinking again and coming back and saying, you know, what do I do? And Dr. Young's saying, well, you're hopeless, man. And it says that, and Dr. Young said, once in a while, people like you get better, but I can't explain it. They appear to have huge emotional displacements, and he describes it as ideas, emotions, and attitudes which were once the guiding forces of the lives of these men are suddenly cast to one side, and a completely new set of conceptions and motives begin to dominate them. And you know, so all we ask you to do is to completely change your attitude fast. So I wonder if we could just close with a vision for you. And you know, one of the things in the big book that I never mentioned, it's in We Agnostics. It's really, chapter 4 is just full of it. You know how you capitalize God in a sentence? There's all these things in We Agnostics that are capitalized, like they're names for God. And in A Vision for You, it says that too. But wander through We Agnostics and look at all the cool things that they call God. I've got one sponsee calls it the great mystery, and another one, the paddler calls it, the kayaker, he calls it the great current. And yeah, that's another one. I like the great coincidence. But here it's the great reality, or the fellowship of the spirit is capitalized, or the road of happy destiny is capitalized. But anyway. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who's still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order, but obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit. And you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. I'd just like to offer a caution for next week for all of us. I've been to a lot of these things, and next week rarely goes smoothly for me. You know, I used to just charge into Monday going, oh, I feel great, let's get everything done. And it was like I was walking through molasses. Nothing worked for me. And what I've learned is just I have to take it really gently on myself and take it as it comes next week and expect, I mean, the way I think of it is that part of me is off processing somewhere and I'm not all available. You know, I'm still, so there's usually a week or so that we've done a lot of heavy lifting this weekend. And so just be gentle with yourself and don't have a lot of expectation next week. And it's a good idea.
Thanks very much, Jim, for that.
Sure.
So who's going to help us through this week?
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation,